Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hi, and welcome back to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz from the Science of Psychotherapy, and I'm here with Richard Hill. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Matt. How are you going? It's been another fabulous week.
Fantastic. Going well. Today, we are going to Texas.
Wow.
But before we do...
I'm sorry to be excited, but that's fantastic. I've got some good friends in Texas.
Oh, wonderful. So, cool. Yes. Well, we'll skip across to Texas in a minute. And we're going to talk to some people that use horses in helping people work through trauma.
Yeah.
And speaking of trauma, if you are wanting to learn more about trauma therapy, then we have a host of great courses that we've curated for you in our academy on thescienceofpsychotherapy.com. And so I will put some links in the show notes, and you can go to some great courses that are presented by people like Bessel van der Kolk, Peter Levine, Pat Odgen, lots of great trauma specialists there. And we've got a bunch of courses there that we have curated for you.
Yeah, yeah. These are ones that are some of the great people and the top people. I mean, also look around at yourself and inquire in a great deal of way. But you know, Pat Ogden, and she's beautifully. She wrote a lovely piece in our June edition, our final neuropsychotherapist in the Where To Now sections. Mm-hmm. You know, good friends.
Well, Richard, today we're going to jump across to Texas to a team there that have a business called Natural Lifemanship. And these guys work with horses, equine therapy, and helping people with trauma, helping teams bond together and learn about relationships, a whole bunch of things that they do. So we're going to go and have a chat to Tim and Bettina.
Oh, that's wonderful. And of course, things that getting back to naturalness, this resonates so much with all the work I do. So I'm really looking forward to listening to these guys.
And if you want to find out more, we'll leave a link in the show notes for you. So let's go across to Texas. Tim and Bettina, welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. Thanks for inviting us over to Texas.
Yes, thank you.
Great to have you all here.
Thank you.
We welcome you to Australia.
Oh. Always wanted to go there.
Well, bring that hat. And everybody listening, we have the Texan hat.
Yes.
And I feel like I should be wearing an Akuba or something to match. But it's fabulous. It really is. Texans do wear these hats, and you look great.
It's not weird here in Texas to see someone in this hat.
Not at all. Not at all.
A lot of attention pretty much anywhere else we go in this hat.
Mainly works, so I don't have to comb my hair.
That's true.
That's not true. He's losing his hair, y'all. He's bald.
All right, now Matthew, bring us back to seriousness.
All right, you guys have this wonderful business called Natural Lifemanship, and you work with horses and people. And so I'm wondering if you guys could just give us a bit of an introduction as to what this business is all about.
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, so really what it's about is it's a process for helping people and horses build healthy relationships and overcome stress and trauma. And so what is underlying really everything that we do is, I would say it's twofold. One is an understanding of the neurobiology of trauma and what we need to do to heal that and how we do that with the horse. And then the secondary piece, which I think is related to this trauma piece, is understanding attachment and interpersonal psychology, how people, you know, the way that we connect with others, the way we connect with ourselves. And so that's the big general over, you know, one of the things we say all the time in this field, in our field, is that a good principle, regardless of where it's applied. And so we are helping people start to build relationships with a horse. And as they do that, their patterns in relationships start to emerge. There are places where they may begin to become activated, right? Their nerve activated, and we're helping them recognize that. We're helping them then co-regulate with the horse and with the therapy team and start making changes somatically, emotionally, and cognitively, all three.
One of the things that makes our model, I think, a little different than a lot of other models is that historically, the principles used in training horses did not transfer to human relationships. And we've done a lot of work changing the way we train horses so that the principles that we use in interacting with our horses apply to human relationships. So that when we're in a session with a human, we're not teaching them principles that are going to cause them problems with their human relationships.
Mm-hmm. Now, can I just ask very, very basically, why horses? What is it about horses?
A lot of it's because a horse's brain naturally develops the same way that the brain of a traumatized human does.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Horses are by nature, living mostly in the survival parts of the brain. And those are the parts of our brain that are activated most when we undergo a lot of abuse, a lot of neglect. Those areas of the brain get stronger, and the parts of the brain that do the thinking and the feeling get weaker. And horses, by nature, don't have the capacity for feeling that humans do, or the capacity for reasoning. So in helping the horse develop those areas of their brain, we have to activate those areas of our brain.
Okay.
Yeah, and I might add to that, or to clarify, is all animals have feelings, right? And we know that they're sentient beings. There's huge research on this. Yeah. And I think what we're talking about a lot is that we know in many different traumatic situations, we've worked with a variety of clients over the last 15 or 20 years. But when we experience trauma, many times we start to dissociate from, check out from parts of the brain. And part of the brain we often will check out from is the limbic system, which is responsible for emotions and connection and attachment. The part of the brain that's more cognitive, we start to kind of lose that part as well. And so horses that are in a because they're prey animals, those lower regions are more developed. They're also herd animals. So they do have relationships with each other. They do have feelings, those kinds of things. Their neocortex, for sure, the part of the brain that's cognitive, is extremely underdeveloped. And so their brains will look very similar to that of a traumatized person as well.
Yeah, I was fascinated. My daughter-in-law has two horses. And she loves horses. She's a rider, and she does various things. But one of them is a fairly well balanced, fairly well organized horse. Had a reasonable sort of life. The other one is actually a traumatized horse who had difficult aspects of upbringing and experiences. And I concur absolutely from a sort of an observer's point of view that looking at the way that she works with the horse in order to manage the traumas and the PTSD and the lack of attachment and so on and so forth, it's enormously familiar. I was sitting there watching her, and I said, you're doing good therapy. And she said, no, I'm just trying to stop the damn horse from kicking me. And but it really struck me. And so when Matt said you guys were coming on, I said, oh, I know all about this, which is not true. But that thing where you're saying there that it's so similar, but that there's a similarity in the nature of horses because they're big and they're strong. I mean, there's great stuff with dogs and there's great stuff with cats and there's great stuff with dolphins. But horses have got this sort of personness, size and strength and stuff.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah.
One of the things that just occurred to me, Richard, as you said that, was you're talking about did you say it was your
daughter-in-law?
Daughter-in-law. One of the things I thought about that we say a lot is that the best way to learn to regulate is to help another regulate, right?
Yes.
And that's a piece of this work is that when you do have a, because both of those horses just described have a place in equine-assisted psychotherapy, in my opinion, in our opinion, right? So I might not partner a horse that has a severe trauma history with a, 9-year-old child who has a trauma history, probably not. But I've had many teenagers or adults who are ready for that. And they start learning, how do I be the nervous system for this horse, right? How do I help this horse to regulate by regulating myself and noticing my own somatic experience, right? So that's a huge piece of it. And then this other horse you just talked about, the one that's very regulated and that has a very different attachment history, that kind of horse is powerful because that horse is actually going to help somebody else regulate. So this is the, you know, they're sort of both ends of this. The other why horses, the answer I love that I've been kind of mulling over a lot of years is that one of the reasons I think horses are so powerful compared to other animals is because they can carry us. So in our model, we do groundwork where the people and horses are on the ground. And then we also do where the horse is carrying the person and it's mounted work, right? So I say often the power in that is that we're helping our clients connect with the one who carries them. And the horse is about the only animal who can do that. That's what a mom and daddy does for a baby. That we connect, the children are connecting with the one who carries them, right? And the caregiver is rocking and rhythmically carrying and moving, and then they're providing connection as well. And so when we start working really hard at things like repairing attachment wounds, horses can do that like no other animal can. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And in my research project of one daughter-in-law, all that has manifested. Her self-regulation has totally shifted and improved over the last 12 months. And the two horses give her different teachings. One is, yes, the self-regulation, and the other one is because the other one is a caring regulator. As sort of, it's the female. And so she's actually, and she's in her 40s now and not having children. And so they are her children. Everything you just said has absolutely played itself out with my daughter-in-law.
Okay, so for someone like myself who has the least experience with horses and anything like this, could you give us a little bit of a insight into like practically what happens? What's the process with a client?
Oh, it's so different with every client. We try to meet the clients where they're at and try to figure out where their brain started messing up.
That's your clinical
term.
You're messing up. You're messing up. We love it. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. And for a lot of our clients, you know, where Bettina was talking about earlier, where your mom is supposed to carry you and rock you and attach to you and connect to you, so many of our clients miss that. Mm. And if that's where they didn't get the nurture that they needed, then we can use the horse to go back and give them that nurture. Or by giving that horse nurture, it has the same effect on the brain, giving nurture versus giving nurture. So they can do either one with the horse. So depending on where the client is in their journey, we can start with whatever area of the brain we need to start with. The horse can provide just passive rhythmic movement if we need to regulate that brain stem. The body's going to move in response to the movement of that horse, which is going to regulate that diencephalon.
Yeah.
And as they start to connect with each other, that limbic system's going to come online. So we can work on whichever area of the brain is really causing the client the biggest problems.
Yeah. So that question's always so hard, right? Because sometimes we're working, you know, on the ground, which looks quite different than if we're doing mounted work. And the other thing I think that's important about a lot of what we teach is that we're teaching these broad relationship principles that people learn with a horse and transfer to others. And so we do have people utilizing what they've learned from us in an office setting or in a nature setting, and they're not able to work with horses, right? And so what Tim just describes, a huge kind of a basic tenet of the work we do, we have several different models of wonderful therapy out there that inform what we do and kind of the research that's out there in neurobiology. But one of them that we've done a lot of learning with Dr. Bruce Perry. Mm-hmm. And so our model utilizes the four functional areas of the brain that he basically teaches. So it's it's basically the triune brain theory, except it's four regions, not three, right? And so all of our clients really, we're engaging lots in the, if they're doing mounted work, for example, we start out with them possibly, right, on the back of the horse. And what we care a lot about is that they're beginning to notice their own body and how the horse affects their body, right? So they notice body sensation. They start noticing, you know, what is it? What is that stress response? When they start to notice a little bit of that stress response, they feel it, they notice that, they start noticing the horse and how the horse moves their body, right? And then as we move a little higher into the brain, Tim just described that diencephalon, we may start to do some yoga movement or brain gym type activities, things that help bring, you know, where we're crossing the midline more, we're paying very close attention as they're riding to things like dissociative tendencies, like where they start checking out in different ways, our clients, or balance issues even, right? So many times people who have severe abuse or neglect histories will have severe balance issues, and the back of the horse is the perfect place to practice that and really break down, right? The different ways that we experience balance. Is it your eyesight, your balance and vestibular system, right? Or proprioception. Some clients are really needing more on the ground, and you know, like younger clients may really need a lot more touch. And so they may first start out engaging in more grooming type things. You know, we know that we get the same physiological benefits from giving touch as we do from getting. In fact, the same regions of the brain will be engaged by watching someone else touch as if I was being touched.
Yes, the mirror neurons. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the main principles is that everything that we do has to be as good for the horse as it is for the human.
Right.
Because we don't believe that healing can come at the expense of another. So if it's not also healing for the horse, it's not going to be healing for you. So our groundwork, the principles that we work off of, are building a relationship devoid of control.
That's interesting.
Of anyone except yourself.
Yeah.
Because control always gets in the way of connection. So not controlling the horse, but expecting the horse to learn how to appropriately control himself is one of the tenets of our model. It's helping the horse get to the place in their brain and helping the client get to the place in their brain where they can both appropriately control themselves, so that control is not part of the relationship.
Yeah, and because although I know that you've got a lot of aspects in the way you think about things, but of course the control, in fact, it's really more the word regulate, you know, that self-regulation, that's right. So it's not externalized or internalized. And it's such a more complex system, the horse. I mean, we're very much there. I mean, I love the work with dogs, and I've done some very, very interesting work with several groups who do these for return vets, but there's more. It's more of a relationship. It's more of a comforting aspect, and I'm really, really just reiterating and reminding myself of what you said. With the horse, they're bigger, but it's also this carriage, this dual realization of proprioception of all these aspects. And horses are beautiful and gorgeous, but then you can't just do anything. You know, they're big things. You've got to have a relationship with them.
Conditional in their acceptance as a dog, yes.
Yes, and the conditions are good, healthy, relational conditions. Yeah,
absolutely.
One of the things that struck me was that this is very somatic work, isn't it? This is you're talking about rhythm and physical connection, very somatic. And the other thing that struck me too was that when we're talking about reconnection, if there's attachment trauma, is it true that people might have an easier to connect with an animal if there's been attachment trauma with other humans, obviously, then to reconnect with an animal may be less threatening? Would that be correct?
I think that's a really, I love that you brought all that up. That I think that's a real important piece of this.
Right.
Clients that I work with, touch is very threatening. connection in general, any level of intimacy, right, is extremely triggering. It's very, very threatening. And with the horse, what you said about the physical connection being so important, to me, that's a huge piece. Well, to us, it's a huge piece because they can feel that physical sense of connection with the horse. And then we help them start bringing that inside. This internal sense of connection is so important, but we get to do that in such a less threatening way because they just don't have the same pathways around a relationship with the horse. Usually now, I mean, there are people who've had trauma with horses and then we're in a different ball game, but that's not our norm. That's not the norm.
Yeah. So, cause I've had a client who had a trauma with a horse, thrown from a horse, and we worked, but similarly, you know, by returning to the horse, by returning to a variety of things and reworking the somatic experience. Fundamentally, just very quickly, she of course, had this sense of, I nearly died when I was thrown by the horse. And we just reframed that to, wow, I was thrown and the horse and I ended up throwing each other and wow, we both survived. And she shifted from one to the other. It was wonderful. But yeah, these interplays with complex beings, human beings just make it even more complex and more difficult.
Well, and there are so many sort of ethical issues in this, right? Because we're talking about, we start to partner with horses. They don't give informed consent, right? So it's really one of the things we're very passionate about is that we are ethical in the work we do with the horses. It has to be good for them. We have to really be helping them build connection. They're healing together, right? Yeah. There has to be a little bit of both. And so when it's not good for the horse, there has to be ways that we're, and that's where this becomes so complex. It's like this huge learning curve to do therapy. And then you add in here, we're talking therapists have to become almost a horse trainer.
I'm guessing that you'd have a good sense whether the horse is enjoying this process or you're pushing the horse too far. Something that I have no idea how you would have. I'm guessing as you work with these animals, you get that sort of sensibility.
Mm. Well, and if you're not, then it's really a clinical issue, because if it's not something that's good for your horse, then what you're doing is you're teaching your client relationship principles that are just going to cause them more problems.
Really excited.
Yeah. In the work I do, we talk about sensitive observation a lot, and it's no different with the horses. It's obvious, yeah.
In somatic work, right, we talk about tracking in the body, right, and being able to track in your own body, and as a therapist, you're tracking in your client's body, and really we're teaching our clients to do the same thing for the horse. And it's typically a very slow process where we're watching every little piece. And horses are really notorious for, you know, I think the greatest issue we have in the horse world is horses that are dissociative because of the way that human beings have trained them to be compliant. They're appeasing, they're dissociative, they're shut down and they're checked out. And that is not that's not the kind of horse that we want in sessions. And so we spend a lot of time helping people learn how to notice that. And how do you help bring your horse back, right? The same things you need to do to help a client with those issues, we have to do for our horses as well.
Right. So do you help people with their horses? So you're people therapists and horse therapists at the same time.
We do some of that. Mostly our trainings are geared toward helping the humans learn how to do that.
Yeah, okay.
So we go to facilities that already have horses that they're using, and we help train them on how to recognize these things in horses and what to do with those things when you see them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all the same stuff. You know, we get this question a lot, right, is how to notice things. It's just the same stuff. If we're thinking higher level sort of principled thinking, then we start to realize we really need to do the same things for our horses that we're doing for people. It's quite the learning curve initially, sure.
Do you have a training program that you do for therapists who have horse backgrounds? Or
yes, we do, and that's what our main business is training therapists and horse professionals.
Oh, good.
That are using is to help people. And a lot of people that we train don't have a degree, but are doing, you know, work with corporations or schools or life coaches that are helping humans learn how to work out a better set of principles.
I was just going to say, I noticed on your website you've got training people in leadership, which is quite different to, attachment trauma.
Yeah. So most of the people that we train, they kind of fall into a couple camps, right? They're either more on the people helping side or they're on the horse side. And then normally you bring two together. So a therapist will partner with an equine professional and they will work together in sessions. And occasionally there are therapists who have lifetime of horse experience, and they may be what we would call dual certified, right? Where they would maybe be trained as I'm the therapist, I'm going to work by myself with a client and a horse, right? But the principles that we teach and the basic fundamentals of the relationship between horse and human and how that helps people, that can transfer to so many different areas. Yeah, right. But we do right. A wide variety. It's a challenge at times. Yeah.
Do the corporate do you get corporate groups coming in? Sort of those corporate training things that they do, where they bring their employee groups along to work with horses and get a bit of an understanding of how unrelational they are.
Yes, and that's a very important piece of it. People burn out in their jobs because they have no connection with anyone that they're working for.
Same as the horses.
Same as the horses. So helping them learn how to have connected relationships and do things out of connection instead of task is going to keep better employees, going to keep more satisfied employees, and it's going to lessen your employee training costs because you do get to keep people longer and they stay happier and they're more productive.
Yeah, so the people we train do that different ways, right? Like there are a lot of people that do sort of a 1 or 2 day training with a corporation where it's a kind of a team building type thing with horses. We've in the past, Tim and I personally in the past have done some of that. That's not something we do a lot anymore. We partner with organizations to do more than 2 days, right? Where we really, because there's this, kind of a career where this way of being in the world is what we're trying to help people change, and that just takes time. That doesn't happen in 1 or 2 days.
We don't go in and just do a training for a school. We stay long enough to help facilitate a cultural change. To understand what trauma has done to those kids in their classrooms and make the cultural shifts needed to accommodate those kids and help facilitate healing of those kids in a school environment.
Yeah.
Connection instead of task, or connection instead of task. It's a beautiful. That's just a if that's the only thing people take away from this podcast, that's beautiful.
The only thing they take away from the podcast, I would be thrilled. That's the huge piece of what we're trying to help people do.
And it's what we try to help horses do too. We don't get task focused around horses. It's all about the connection. The second the task becomes the priority, then we start trying to control. And that always gets in the way of the connection.
Yes, and you lose regulation and you come into control.
Well, I think it's just absolutely wonderful work that you guys are doing. Very interesting. And I would encourage everyone that, wants to learn a little bit more, have a look at our show notes. We'll put links there to naturallifemanship.com, I believe it is. Yes. And you can check these guys out yourself. Well, Tim and Bettina, thank you so much for joining us here. And we wish you all the best.
Yes, as you're out there, helping people, training therapists, training leaders, sorting out people who are working in the workplace. There's just a whole host of people that should just get on that that website, naturallifemanship.com. Brilliant.
All right. Well, thank you so much, guys. Thanks for having us over in Texas.
Yes. Thank you for having us over in Australia.
Beautiful. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow. Well, that's just wow. That's a wow. That's a wow sort of thing, because it we take animals for granted so much. And and I just want to say it a third time: connection instead of task.
Yeah, yeah.
And when task becomes the main focus, then you slip into needing to control.
Mm.
Whereas when connection is the main purpose, then you're simply needing to organize your regulation, and you can self-organize your regulation. Beautiful. So,
yeah.
And they do things for therapists. They actually have corporate people in, you know, so if you're out there and you've got a corporate group and they don't get on, stick them in with a bunch of horses with our friends, and Bettina will show you a thing or two, which is great.
Yeah, the thing that really struck me too was the fact that people that do have attachment trauma issues working with an animal, in this case working with a horse, is likely to be a lot less threatening. And so maybe there's, you know, progress can be made faster, more effectively. And there's that whole somatic aspect there as well, which I thought very interesting.
But this is what we've been doing for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, interacting and engaging with our animals and domesticating and having them help us and so on and so forth. We've just stopped doing it as we moved into cities.
Mm.
Get back to the natural. Yeah, natural lifemanship. Beautiful.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thanks everybody for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. And Richard and I will catch you again next week as we talk to another guest in this fascinating world of the science of us.
Fantastic. Bye for now. Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.